John chapter 6, 16 to 21. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Don't be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. We thank you, God, for this reading from your word. We thank you that it reassures us that no matter what happens in this life, no matter how we are tossed about by each storm that comes along, that you are always there to comfort us. In Jesus' name I ask this. Amen.
Awesome Christ-honoring songs that we sang this morning. It just seemed like, as it should be, Jesus was at the center of every song that we sang. And no different with our text this morning, where Jesus plays the central role. And the Word of God is just so amazing. The insights, the connections, the way things fit together. Just as I was looking at this text, I mean, before I even really got in depth, I felt like, you know, just from looking at the Bible itself, there was enough material already for a whole message, because it's just amazing, especially as we've been studying these themes throughout all the passages, and things just kind of start jumping off the page and coming to light. And so the Word is just amazing, but it's important to go beyond that, because the Word is amazing because God is amazing, because Jesus is amazing, because the one behind the text is amazing. And so that's where our focus needs to be as we look at the text this morning. So if you're joining us this morning, we're in this series called Eat, Drink, Live, and we're looking at the metaphors for food and water and that sort of imagery throughout the beginning of the Gospel of John. And so last week, Hannah looked at the feeding of the 5,000 through the bread and the fish, the God who abundantly supplies our needs and even goes beyond what we think we need. And now this week, we look at water, and then next week it goes back to food and Jesus and the bread of life. So this is just all over the gospel. And as we've talked about, there are 7 signs in this portion of John. So this morning is the 5th sign recorded in John's gospel. And the message in this text of Jesus walking on water, in a way, is very simple, but also extremely profound. John's account of the story, actually, compared to Mark and especially Matthew, is highly compressed. That John doesn't give us a whole lot of details, just the simplest of the elements of the story. He leaves out quite a bit, but even so paints the necessary imagery in order to communicate a few monumental truths about Jesus. So I want to focus on 3 short segments in this story as it quickly transitions from chaos to calm through the power and presence of Jesus. So I want to talk about 3 segments. Number 1, we're going to look at water and the chaos in verses 16 through 19. And then in verse 20, we'll look at water and the Christ. And then in verse 21, water and the calm. And we'll see what kind of imagery and what role the water plays in each of these sections and its significance. And then we'll begin to invite Jesus into the storms of our life. So let's start, number 1, with the water and the chaos. So the scene is not a promising one. We're told that it was dark, that Jesus was not with them. Not a good combo there. A strong wind was blowing and the waters were rough. verse 18. And then even worse, they're in about the worst position they could possibly be in. They're about 3 to 4 miles, 5 to 6 kilometers from shore, which was about halfway from where they left in Bethsaida to where they were going in Capernaum, which is why in the account in the Gospel of Mark, he just says they were in the middle of the lake. So you kind of get the picture, right? That John is highlighting the immense danger that they are in, that they're too far to turn back, and yet they're not close enough to say, well, let's just try to go on a little further. They're just kind of stuck in this storm in the very middle of their journey. So it's a bad situation that they find themselves in. They're stuck in the middle of the chaotic sea, the rough waters. And the feeling of desperation among the disciples, their total lostness or chaos can be felt or would have been felt even more by the original readers when we understand the symbolism in the Bible and in really all ancient literature of the chaotic sea and its waters. See, in Hebrew literature, the sea is a place of chaos, and the chaotic waters can only be tamed by a supreme power in the world. And of course, we only have to read 2 verses into the Bible to get this imagery right away and the important role that it plays. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And what do we find? The earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. It is a world of chaos. It is a scene in a world desperately awaiting the order-making voice of God, who himself can separate light from darkness, land from sea. So God took the materials at hand, the chaotic waters, and he created beauty and calm out of chaos. So God is saying from the very beginning that this is what he does and who he is. This imagery then continues throughout the whole Old Testament. It's especially felt in the Psalms. And once you know it's there, you'll see this all over the Psalms. And in fact, the Psalms, the imagery will make more sense. The psalmists often speak of the mighty waters that close in on them. And mighty waters is just powerful imagery for the threatening circumstances that the individual fears. In the ancient Near Eastern creation myths that even other people groups around Israel had, there was always kind of this primal mass of chaotic waters, and they had to be subdued by a divine being. And so it came to kind of symbolize the threatening of the created order, the waters did. And so the Bible is making a very clear statement about God and who he is. Think of Psalm 42. As the deer pants for streams of water, my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, the living God. When can I go and meet with God? My tears have been my food day and night, while people say to me all day long, where is your God? Verse 6, my soul is downcast within me. And then verse 7, deep calls to deep. In the roar of your waterfalls, your waves and breakers have swept over me, and I say to my God, why have you forgotten me? The chaotic waters are the psalmist's way of describing his mental chaos that he feels. He feels like waves and breakers are sweeping over him, like God has forgotten him. Have you ever been there? God, where are you? Why am I lost in this chaotic sea? Perhaps even today, but surely at some point in life, you feel like the disciples. You're rowing the boat in the dark, rough, chaotic waters of life, wondering, what can I do? But then off in the distance, you see a figure walking on the chaotic waters, apparently controlling them and overcoming them. And you wonder, could it be? You're still frightened as you're about to be overcome by the waves of life when suddenly you hear his voice. Those simple yet profound words. It is I. Don't be afraid. If you take nothing else from this morning, take this one thing, that nothing calms the chaotic waters of life like the voice of Jesus. The voice of Jesus. Nothing brings calm to the chaos of life like hearing the voice of Jesus saying, "It is I. Don't be afraid." Hannah and I have started doing this more and more in our counseling situations, that people often tell us about the chaos that is in their life. And yes, we're there to listen, and we may sometimes have some advice or biblical principles. But what we've been trying to do more and more is to make time to listen to the voice of Jesus. Because above all, what people need is to hear that voice saying, "It is I. Don't be afraid." That's what we are craving. That is the remedy, where we put ourselves sort of in the position of the disciples and the power of hearing that voice. I think of even just reflecting on my own life. It's always important to put yourself in the story when you're studying a text. And you know, just kind of thinking, I sort of feel like here at the church, sometimes this is where, you know, we are, I am, that it's kind of like, all right, we're all in, and we're way too far out. There's no turning back, right? We're out in the middle of the lake now. We're moving forward, and yet we're not quite there at the destination, and we'll probably never feel like we're there and kind of feel far from that point where God is moving. And it's like I can see it in the distance. I have the visions. I'm leaning into it in my prayers sometimes, and it feels so strong, and there are glimpses where God is taking us and what he's doing. But then sometimes I just feel lost at sea, honestly. And it feels a little chaotic at times. And what do I need most at those times? And what do you need most of those times? I need to hear the voice of Jesus saying, "It is I. Don't be afraid." Because I know if I have that, then I can endure anything, and I can stick with anything. And in your life, perhaps you've wandered out far from the shore. Maybe you're confused. The chaotic waters of life are closing around you. You're several kilometers out, and even more from your destination. And what do you need? You need the voice of Jesus to say, "It is I. Don't be afraid." Why is that the voice that you need? Why does it matter so much to hear his voice, to hear him say? Why did it matter to the disciples to hear him say, "It is I"? Well, let's look at point number two, water and the Christ. Verse 20, "But he said to them, 'It is I, don't be afraid.'" So why is this story so powerful? Why does John include it? Is it just because he remembered, oh yeah, Jesus, he went from Bethsaida to Capernaum? Should probably put a story in there about how he got there, you know, or you know, did he just kind of at the last minute insert it? I don't think so. As has often been the case with these signs and miracle stories, John doesn't explain how it happened, and here he doesn't actually address this significance with any kind of commentary, and I think because it would have been so obvious to the original readers. And in fact, we find in the other accounts of this story in the other Gospels, it seems like the disciples did actually pick up on what was happening. And the message and implications here is that if Jesus controls and commands the chaotic waters, and only God can control and command the chaotic waters, then Jesus is God. As we mentioned in our introduction to this series from John 1, John intentionally aligns Jesus with what are likely the two most important events in the Old Testament, and that's creation, the creation story, and the Exodus. Thus, John tells us, "In the beginning," in chapter 1, "was the Word." He's immediately aligning Jesus with creation. And then he says in verse 14 of chapter 1 that Jesus tabernacled among us, dwelt among us, and it's an allusion to the Exodus. And so for Jesus, for John, Jesus represents the new creation and the new Exodus of God's people. The two greatest moments in Israel's history are now replicated in Jesus. And this short story actually shows us the exact same two things and aligns Jesus with these events and with God in those events. So let's look briefly at both of them, because then you can really sense the power of this story and why it's so meaningful. So first, creation. The allusion, I think, here to Genesis 1:1-2 is so clear. In both stories, there's darkness, there's winds, and there's water. And it is only the voice of God that can bring order and life to those situations. And so John is saying, this is like that. And he is him. The same God that spoke the world into order is the same God standing before you on the waters. And indeed, this becomes so clear when we look at Jesus' first words in this passage, where in verse 20, we hear the words of Jesus saying, ego eimi, which literally translated is just, I am. I am. A direct reference to or echo of Exodus 3 in the story of Moses, where Moses says, God, who are you? Tell me who you are. And God says, I am who I am. And he says, this is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you to me, has sent me to you. The name Yahweh, which God reveals in Exodus 3:15, which just gets translated as Lord in most translations, Yahweh is just a third person form of I am. So Yahweh is just, he is the name of God. He is. So when God speaks of himself, he says, I am. But when we speak of him, we say, he is Yahweh. So when Jesus walks on the water and controls the waters, and then he says, ego eimi, I am, he is no doubt claiming and showing himself to be God in the flesh, the one who was in the beginning controlling the chaotic waters, and the one who right now in the present in the story is doing the same. That's why Jesus got the reaction he did in John 8:58-59 when he says, before Abraham was, I am. And what do? They pick up stones to kill him because they understood when Jesus said, ego eimi, that was a statement he was making. And that's why they picked up stones to stone him. Not I was, but I am, expressing the eternity of his being and the oneness with the Father. So Jesus aligns himself with creation in this story. And then second, with the Exodus. As we've said, the most defining event in the Old Testament, according to most, is the Exodus. And the biggest miracles of that event, of course, involve water and food. Passover meal, the crossing of the sea, and the manna from heaven. And as Hannah helped us see last week, John has already aligned Jesus with the Exodus through the feeding of the 5,000. It's a direct echo of the manna from heaven and the God who can supply all of our needs miraculously provides for us. It's why John tells us at the end of that story from last week that after the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world. Why would they make that connection? Why would the feeding of the 5,000 immediately have them say, this is the prophet? How did they come to that conclusion? Well, they saw this as an Exodus type of miracle, that Jesus was like Moses, for they would have known the prophecies in Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 and 18. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me, Moses speaking, like me among you. And then God speaking in verse 18 says, I will raise up for them a prophet like you, like Moses. So Moses led the people in the Exodus, and now Jesus does this Exodus-type miracle, and their conclusion is, surely this is the prophet. See how they identified what Jesus did with the same miracle of the Exodus. He, of course, is the one greater than Moses, and John himself in chapter 1:17 says this, Right? The law was given through Moses, but grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. So it's no coincidence that immediately after that story, and between that story and Jesus calling himself the bread of life, another Exodus allusion, Jesus now replicates the other Exodus miracle, the crossing of the waters of the sea. He comes down from the mountain in verse 15, echoing Moses, and just like Moses, and then he crosses the sea. And it's important to remember, notice, that these stories in chapter 6, they're actually all, just to even kind of drive it home a little more, they're all set in the context of the Passover feast. In John chapter 6, verse 4, he tells us the Jewish Passover festival was near. So he's evoking memories of the Exodus in the reader just before he tells them these stories. But Jesus provides in the wilderness, and now he shows he has authority over the sea. He is the inaugurator of the new Exodus, a new deliverance of all peoples. In Matthew, the wind dies down when Jesus climbs into the boat, and it says that those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." And that's the first time in Matthew the disciples addressed Jesus with that title. And why did they do this? Well, they saw the one who controlled the sea and who called himself I Am, and only God can do those things. It's funny that some contemporary scholars say that Jesus did not claim to be God. That was kind of only a later invention, that he never thought of himself as God. And I just kind of think, are you reading the same Gospels? Because you don't even need Jesus' words. Just his actions, the things he does, he's purposely aligning himself as the Messiah, the one who was to come, just through these actions, let alone his word. He's saying he's God at every turn in this and the other Gospels through what he does and says. So that can't be denied. The question is, what do you believe? He was either a raving lunatic or he was who he said he was. So as we feel like we're drowning in the chaotic waters, why does it matter to hear his voice saying, "It is I, don't be afraid"? Because Jesus is God, and he has the power to bring order to chaos, as in Genesis, and to bring us out as the new Exodus of God's people, as he did for the Israelites through Jesus. See, Jesus doesn't leave us in the chaos of the storm. He gets into the boat with us, and he leads us to the other side, to the promised land, so to speak, which brings us to our third and final point, which is water and the calm. Water and the calm, verse 21. The other gospel accounts here tell us that Jesus calmed the waters. In John, it's just sort of implied, because he tells us that immediately the boat reaches the shore where they were heading. Again, Jesus is fulfilling the scriptures and claiming to be God through these actions. And there's particular imagery and allusions here, again, to the Psalms for what Jesus is doing. And let me just give you a sampling, for as Hannah said last week, kind of one passage can illuminate then another for us. Psalm 89:9. Talks about the God who rules over the sea, that you rule over the surging sea. When its waves mount up, you still them, which is what Jesus does. Psalm 77, verses 13 through 19. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The water saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea. Your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. Psalm 107 is a salvation history psalm that sings of God's deliverance to those who are lost, who are caught in darkness and chaos. And it goes through all of these different ideas of those who are in desert wastelands, those who sit in utter darkness, and then eventually comes to those who feel like they're caught in the perils of the sea. And it says, some went out on the sea ships, verse 23, they were merchants on the mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, his wonderful deeds in the deep. For he spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunkards. They were at their wits' ends. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven. That's exactly what Jesus does in this story. In Hebrew literature, the sea is a place of chaos, but Jesus in the New Testament delivers the disciples from that chaos. As Hannah read Psalm 23 at the end of her sermon last week, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing, I shall not want, an allusion to the feeding of the 5,000. And then what? He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters, the calm waters. Jesus does both of these things of Psalm 23 back to back. He refreshes my soul. Jesus is proclaiming his sovereignty over the created order and all the chaos that we encounter. Jesus calms the sea. In the separate story in Mark, in a separate story different from this one, just another event on the sea, Jesus says, quiet, be still, to the sea. And the wind dies down and the calm comes. And the disciples' reaction, of course, is, who is this that even the wind and waves obey him? Because again, they knew only God can control the wind and the water. The implication is only God could do this. The band can come and get ready. The last thing to mention here is that there's a possibility of actually two miracles in this story. Jesus walking on and calming the waters, but then notice the text says that immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. See, Jesus enters your situation. He gets into the boat with you. But you might still be wondering, well, how do I get from here to there? How do I get to my destination? And the message is, now that Jesus is in the boat with you, you don't have to worry as long as he is with you. For he says, it is I. Don't be afraid. Matthew and Mark add, take courage, before Jesus says, it is I. He is the God of the impossible. Like the Israelites wondering, how will we cross this sea? But with God on your side, all things are possible. So the miracle of the instant landing, getting immediately to the other side, is clearly related to one thing and one thing only, and that is the power and presence of Jesus with the disciples. And so that's what we're going to pray for all of us, that the power and the presence of Jesus will be with you this morning. That you would hear his voice saying, it is I, do not be afraid. Maybe just close your eyes. It's important to use our imagination in prayer and in our talking with God. Do you believe that he is? Do you hear his voice saying, I am? And are you willing to bring Jesus into the boat? To invite his presence into your life? To calm the raging seas? Some of those seas, perhaps caused by chaotic seas, perhaps caused by sin, some just the realities of life. But this morning, if you feel like you're out in the middle of the lake, that you're lost at sea, that the waters are coming over you, the waters of chaos, then this morning we're going to invite the presence of God to hear his voice so that you know you'll be okay. He will guide you, perhaps even immediately, to the other side. So as the band begins to play and help us to respond, to put some things into words, we never put any pressure on people to come forward and respond, but the reality is often in the Bible and in times there's just something about a physical response. In the story in the other Gospels, we have Peter, and you know, he had to get out of the boat to go meet Jesus. He had to take a step of faith. So I'm just going to begin to pray for you and over you as a way to start our response, but I'm going to encourage you maybe to take a step of faith, or just to show God that, God, I need you to come into the chaotic waters of my life just by coming forward to pray.